As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Stasekel. He is Paul Tenorio. This is my second time recording this intro, second and hopefully final. Paul, your computer keeps freezing during the show. What's going on?
You know, Sam, it's funny because for the first year and a half of this podcast, your computer was just an absolute mess. Mm-hmm. It would take 20 minutes to start up. It would not work sometimes. You didn't have a Y key.
No Y.
All sorts of stuff. And mine was functioning perfectly. Then you finally got a new computer.
I did it.
And mine just stopped working well. It's like the gods want Allocation Disorder to always have some level of insecurity when recording. Like something might go wrong.
It's a zero-sum game, clearly, between our computers. You know, one of us can be good, the other one can't be.
Yet like, another sign just how it is. That we're too closely linked.
Computers
are like E.T. and Elliot, basically.
Perhaps we shouldn't have put disorder in the name of our podcast. It's a little bit poetic, a little bit too poetic for my liking. Anyway, we have what I think to be an interesting show today. We are recording on a Thursday afternoon instead of our usual Thursday evening block. Paul wrote a fascinating story about Inter Miami. I picked up, I think, a secondary assist on that one with some contributions, but Paul did a ton of work to get that one over the line, and there were a lot of interesting revelations in there. I know we talk about Inter Miami a lot on this show, but we're gonna talk a little bit more about them today, and I think we're gonna put a little bit of a new spin on things. We're also gonna talk a little bit about some expansion news out of Las Vegas, some news out of Lugano, Switzerland/Chicago, Illinois. Yes, those two places are linked, listener. And some impressions from, you know, the MLS action and USMNT Euro action going on here ahead of the opening of the international window in less than 2 weeks. What are we, 10 days away?
We're close.
That's crazy. A quick programming note on that front, by the way. Both Paul and I will be traveling for all three of those qualifiers. So we're going to do a couple Allocation Disorder episodes live and in person. With each other, not with you. Sorry.
We wanted to do exciting. Live Allocation Disorder, but COVID is not participating. They're not,
I mean,
not helping.
Paul, let's be honest. We wouldn't have gotten our together enough to, oops, Joe bleep that. We wouldn't have gotten our stuff together enough to actually pull that off.
Well, I think, you know, it's like, we're like that meme, like our fall plans and then, you know, Delta variant.
Yeah.
It's like, but we need a third window in that meme, which is like our level of disorganization.
Yeah, just like us in general. Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of fall plans, just like life, you know, just life.
Definitely.
Anyway, actually, though, I am, now that we're talking about this, I am curious if anyone out there is listening and would be interested in attending something like that in the future, like a live show or something like that with an audience and you being in that audience. Let us know, like, for real. You know, I'm curious what the appetite for something like that would be, potentially down the road. So keep us in the loop there. Paul, I mentioned it off the top. You wrote the story about Miami. We've talked a lot about Miami on this show. We've talked about the dysfunction. You went into some of that dysfunction in the piece. We don't need to spend a lot of time there. We've covered that ground for the most part in this space, but there are some interesting ownership kind of details that you were able to uncover. Walk us through some of those, and walk us through what you think is worth walking through about that piece that you wrote earlier this week.
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing to pull out of this story was one line coming out of the lead, which is that the way MLS found out about Blaise Matuidi is pretty crazy. And Sam, we had heard this for some time from, I think we were up in the double digits of number of sources telling us this, and we were just trying to really lock it down. The manner in which MLS found out about the violation was because co-owner Marcelo Claret told MLS Commissioner Don Garber. He told Garber that Miami was in violation of the MLS rules and regulations, according to sources I spoke with, and he told him about Matuidi. And once that violation was known by the league, they opened an investigation. And in the course of that investigation, as has been previously reported and as was in Major League Soccer's press release about the sanctions, Jorge Mas and Inter Miami opened up their books and revealed, went beyond opening up their books. They let the league know about four other payments on the side that altered players' budget hits.
This blew my mind when you were kind of telling me about it, and when, you know, when you were reporting it out, when I read it, and, you know, it got some traction out there, but it didn't get enough. This is crazy, man. Like, this is an owner telling on his own team, effectively.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I don't know. I've never heard of something like that.
No, I mean, I think when you look at the lead, you kind of get an idea why, right? You know, they were in Major League Soccer's headquarters for a reason. There was a significant amount of disagreement within that ownership group, a significant amount of tension within that ownership group between Claret and Mas and David Beckham and Masayoshi Son as well. And so, you know, and we know where that's gone since, right? We've reported previously that Claret and Son are looking to sell their stake in the team. Maybe Mas will buy it out. You know, our colleague Matt Slater reported that the Mas brothers own an option on that. They can purchase that stake for $270 million. So perhaps that's the solution that's found. But I think we should acknowledge that basically you have to kind of connect the dots here and see that that tension, that disagreement that was happening likely is what led to Marcelo Claret talking to Don Garber about the management of the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, essentially the fact that they were breaking the rules. But what, you know, I think that that line in the story, that detail matters not as much for Miami as for the entire league. And it matters because when the league came out and made this statement, they made it seem as though this was the exception to the rule, that Miami only happened in Miami, that this stuff doesn't happen around the league. We, of course, in our first story about Miami, reported that that's not true. That in fact, this kind of stuff happens in the league all the time. And in fact, I quoted another general manager in this story saying, a lot of teams get creative. Miami got too creative. And I guess the question is, how much cheating is too much cheating? You know, is there a difference between paying a guy $3 million on the side to make him cap compliant and paying a guy $100,000 on the side to make him cap compliant?
I mean, this is the MLS version of baseball's unwritten rules right here.
Right. And so... Yeah. You know, what we have to consider here is there were five roster violations on Inter Miami's roster. All five agreements had been approved by the player department, by Major League Soccer and the headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
None of the five had been flagged as anything being wrong with them. None of the five.
Or determined. Maybe they were flagged at the time, but they didn't investigate deeply.
They approved them. They played the entire season, or half the season in the case of Matuidi. And none of them were flagged going into the next season until Marcelo Claret told Garber about this payment on the side from Matuidi. And until Mas handed over the paperwork on the other payment on the side.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, MLS has a set of rules that are essentially unenforceable.
It's like an honor system.
Yeah, you're not going to your point, Sam, you're not going to have instances often of an owner going to the league and saying, hey, just thought you guys should know, I'm paying this guy on the side.
I don't see Merritt Paulson doing that.
Yeah, don't think any owner is really going to go to the league.
Don't see Jimmy Haslam doing that one.
No. So what does that mean, Sam? I mean, for me, in the course of this entire reporting about this, about Miami and what went wrong and all these interesting details and some of the stuff that I was trying to get confirmed that didn't make it into this piece, but like all of this mess that's happening and this disagreements and all these people making decisions and, you know, changing strategies or whatever, that all is focused on one team. That all impacts one fan base, one roster, one front office. This detail speaks volumes about an issue that the league has and a major question that remains coming out of the Matuidi investigation. Does the league intend to address the fact that this investigation, in my view, shows that there's no way to enforce their own rules? That this cap is, you know, and this cap is unenforceable. And what makes it even more difficult is the number of buckets that exist. So these teams aren't just trying to fit people under a cap. They're trying to fit numbers into these different buckets. And right. That's creating more opportunities to break the rules. And yeah. I just wonder, as we wrote before, and as I think both of us have had conversations since with people around the league, is the league going to examine itself and say, okay, our owners are building hundreds of millions of dollars worth of facilities. Our owners are paying hundreds of millions of dollars in expansion fees. Our owners are aggressively shopping in the transfer market, as you just reported. They want to spend. They're billionaires. They right. have more financial heft than almost any league in the world.
Yeah. Maybe. Yet, maybe literally any league in the world.
Right. Maybe the Premier League, maybe not. Maybe the Russian League, maybe not.
If you go top to bottom in the Premier League versus MLS, maybe this is a story we should write, actually, and just compare the ownership groups from the two. I'd be curious. Yeah. See who has the higher net worth.
Yet, the one thing that hasn't changed is the roster rules. And you can look at Young Money and say, oh, that's an introduction to more spending. And it is. Your story just indicated that. But what it really is another area of spending with really strict restrictions on that spending. And so now you have to look at every single Young Money player and say, are we sure that guy's making $612,500 or less?
Yeah.
Are we sure that, you know, that over the average life of that contract, if they're coming on loan, you know, if they're coming from one city football group team in South America to another, that salary definitely is.
Or that a club didn't reroute some of a transfer fee to a player to kind of work around a salary restriction.
How can you ever? So these buckets are creating these dilemmas is essentially what I'm trying to say.
And exacerbating.
The violation really. Is indicative of that. It's indicative of the fact that you can't really enforce it.
Yeah, I mean, I think police maybe is a better word there than enforce, right? Because they're going to enforce when they find the violations. It's just hard to find them, right?
Have they found them besides this?
I mean, not that we know of, right? There's never really been a punishment before. So there was the Gio Dos Santos situation, but that wasn't really finding anything. It wasn't a surprise that the Galaxy had 4 DPs. We all knew that was happening. But I don't know. I think every league with a set of rules like MLS, whether it's in soccer or outside, is going to have issues like this, right? There are always going to be ways to get around the rules. And I don't think that's any fault of any particular league, right? You sort of enter into there's a social contract, right? That the people who are competing in these leagues are going to act in good faith and not cheat. But there's also like a literal contract that every, I think it's owner, managing owner, club president, and club CBO, chief business officer, and chief soccer officer sign that say that they will abide by the roster rules under punishment of potential termination and a serious, serious, serious fine. Like, I think it's $500,000 or something like that. So there's like a literal legal contract. So Yes. Does MLS need to improve its compliance efforts? Absolutely. Right? It shouldn't come to this, right? The Matuidi situation and the Miami situation, there were real questions that people were asking in real time that MLS didn't have either the ability or desire to investigate. And that needs to change. And the league has said that they are going to change that and that they are going to increase their compliance efforts. I've made some calls on that just earlier, right before we started recording this show. And I'm still waiting to hear back on whether or not any of those changes have happened yet, right? On whether or not any hires have been made or any employees have been, their responsibilities have shifted or anything like that. So that's still TBD. I don't know,
what can really
man.
Be done? I mean, if these payments are being made to
members
of players,
we can't answer that question, right? Because we don't know what's being done now in terms of that stuff. We don't know the baseline. I'm sure the league could make it harder for teams to cheat. Right? Can they prevent it entirely? No. If you have a motivated cheater, if you have a motivated club that wants to bend the rules and wants to break the rules, they're going to be able to find a way to do that.
Well, no one's going to break the rules without motivation. I mean, all of these teams that are doing it, and you and I have heard multiple teams, you know, and it's just a matter of like having the sourcing or having the direct evidence, right? We're in the same position as the league. You hear all this stuff and you can't really do anything about it because unless you have evidence of it, you know, you can't really report it. You can't put it out there. But, you know, this is not something that I shouldn't say it wasn't shocking. What happened with Matuidi was shocking in just kind of how much money was being spent on the side. Yeah. But the other stuff of, you know, a six-figure agent fee here or there, absolutely not. You know, and when people are talking, I mean, it's kind of discussed casually around the league. It's not discussed as though it's some big deal. It's like, yeah, I mean, that happens. You figure out a way. You give a guy a marketing contract or, hey, maybe it's a, you know, maybe it's
the off-book agent fee.
Or, yeah, maybe, hey, we pay an agent fee through another company on the side or not even. You pay it. I mean, as, you know, my interview with Jorge Mas in June, you know, these payments, you pay it from Inter Miami and you just don't report it, you know? Yeah. I mean, you don't have to do that much if you're not showing where those payments are going or if you're paying it to another company. So it's just very, very difficult, I think, to have a compliance department that really, truly can do something. All of these owners have different companies. You know, there's so many different ways to structure deals. It's very difficult. And look, I know that what you say all the time is, you know, there, whatever you make the rule, someone will try to find a way to overstep it.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's some level of simplifying the spend so that the cheating is only happening in one way, right?
Yeah, like, I agree with that. Yeah.
You know, these buckets are creating places where people are feeling like they're forced to cheat.
It makes it more opaque, too. It makes it easier to hide stuff.
Yeah, honestly. Because you're not, you know, for example, Young Money is a really good example of this. You know, you're telling these teams, okay, we want you to spend on young players, which is already difficult to hit on young players. You know, it's very, we look around the league history. There aren't a ton of young foreign players who have come into the league on high money and performed well, and even fewer that have been sold on, right? So you're telling them, go and do this really difficult thing that's going to put your job on the line, chief soccer officer, and is going to have your owner saying, I want a return on this investment because the league is telling me this is all about ROI. And then you're telling them, oh, but also the salary has to be underneath 612.5. So now, even if you find the right guy, that guy better be making this number or less, or else they can't fit into that bucket. So let's say you go and find a really good player in South America, and that player is making 5, 6, 7, 8 over 4 years. They're not going to come to you on loan or on a transfer and take a hit in pay. You know, and so then those GMs are looking and saying, okay, how can we alter these numbers? How can we structure it so that a transfer fee includes an agreement on the side with the team that we're buying from, that they're going to execute an extra percentage of the transfer fee to the player so that the salary that we give the league looks lower than what the actual compensation is.
Sure.
That's what you're opening up by the specificity of this rule. And that those are the areas that MLS can...
The more rules you create, the more rules there are to break.
The right? reason why you have to
put
to
it
break
simply.
Them,
yeah.
Way.
So, yeah. No, I mean, I agree with you on that front. I just, like, I don't know. I think the league, obviously there are some holes. Obviously they need to improve their compliance efforts, but there's only so much they can do, in my opinion. Right? And if you have a team that wants to cheat, they're going to be able to figure out a way to do it. And I don't know. I don't know how you solve the problem, man. Like, I don't know. It's crazy, right? Because MLS is defined in so many ways by these rules, right? Like, we talk, this is what this show is all about, right? How MLS is defined by these rules, both past, present, and future versions of the league. And, but the fact that they've, I don't know, the fact that they've proven to be kind of, it's a little bit of a house of cards, right? Like, the fact that they've kind of proven to be so easily broken and so hard to find that they actually were broken, it sort of shatters the illusion a little bit, right? Kind of through the looking glass a little bit here. And I don't know. I think we talked about this on previous shows and maybe even in some of our writing, but I think our hope with this whole Miami scandal was that the league would take a look and say, okay, maybe we should reevaluate whether or not we need these things at all, right? Obviously that's not really what's going to be happening here. But I don't know, man, like, I don't really see it changing all that much. I think the league will, I think it'll hire some lawyers, probably increase its compliance efforts, maybe have some more sunshine on all of the deals that are going down and all of, maybe increase the punishments for violators to deter people. But at the end of the day, I keep saying it, if someone wants to cheat, they're gonna.
I mean, that's what the punishment for Paul McDonough was, right? Suspended for 2 years, career likely over in many ways. He got hit harder than anyone. You know, Jorge Mas getting fined $250K is nothing. Every other owner cleared of wrongdoing. You know, the team got hit hard, right? So the owner maybe thinks, okay, we're set back a few years and that really will deter owners. Yeah. But Paul McDonough was suspended as long as he was, in part, to be a deterrent for everyone else, to have every other GM think twice,
make him escape
about
code.
Doing
sure.
it. But, you know, if you're a GM and you're reading the Miami story, or frankly, they didn't need to, because we heard from so many different people around the league, you know, what I ended up right. reporting.
And you're confident your own owner isn't going to tell on you, then... Right.
Then does it really deter you? That's and the answer is probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
I guess don't burn that bridge with the owner, right? Maybe that's the lesson.
What does it matter? The owner is going to be flipping on himself. He's not going to do that. He's going to see the punishment Miami got that hurt the team.
Just hope if your team is owned by multiple people that they don't get into a fight. I don't know. Only work for sole clubs that are owned by one individual. Maybe that's the lesson if you're a GM. I don't know. It's a bizarre, complicated situation. I have a feeling that there will be more to come from this down the road. Hopefully,
maybe,
we can continue reporting on
maybe
it.
Maybe not. I feel like the league wants all discussion about Blaise Matuidi and Inter Miami and cheating and cap compliance to go away. That they would be perfectly happy saying, we issued our punishment and we feel confident in our compliance department, we've made a couple hires, and that's all that we're going to say going forward, and that nothing will actually change. That's what I believe is the ideal for MLS, and that's where that's my guess. I don't know how much more we'll hear other than, yeah, we made a couple hires to our compliance department.
Yeah, I mean, the league isn't going to want to push this narrative. I understand that, you know.
But I don't even know that they're going to change rules. I just wonder about the actual appetite, you know, to alter anything that would make it easier to spend money for owners who want to spend money.
Yeah, well, I think they'll keep going down the road they're going down. I think they'll just do some compliance things and that'll be that. Speaking of that'll be that, I think we can call time on this discussion unless you want to have anything else. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back with some MLS expansion talk. I guess MLS expansion talk in more ways than one. We'll call it that way. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Well, luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back to Allocation Disorder. We are done talking about Miami. Don't worry, listeners. I know you want to get out of Florida. It's hot. It's August. No one wants to be there right now. Don't worry. We're gone. Done. We're going to another place that's really pleasant in the summertime. Las Vegas, Nevada. Paul, some news emerged.
How about that segue?
Huh? Proud of myself. I don't plan any of these things. They just happen. A story came out earlier on Thursday that a group comprised of billionaires, Wes Edens and Nassef Sawiris, who I hope I just pronounced that name correctly, who co-own Aston Villa, have filed a trademark for a prospective Major League Soccer team in Las Vegas. Wes Edens also is a co-owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, who, of course, just won the NBA championship. And the name, Paul, have you seen the name? Am I going to break this news to you? Did you see it?
I saw the name on Reddit a couple days ago, and then I completely forgot I saw it on Reddit until this story came out, and then I was angry at myself.
Okay, so it's you know, you're fitting in with the name then. You're a real villain. The Las Vegas Villains. Which I don't know. I kind of like it.
I love it because it's really going to get announced as Las Vegas FC. So we got to love the villains while they're the villains, you know.
That's correct. Or maybe CF Las Vegas, who knows. Deportivo Las
Vegas.
Maybe
it'll be Las Vegas City Football Soccer Club.
All caps. Which part's all caps?
All of it.
I can't talk about this enough. It's very off topic. But St. Louis City SC, the city is all caps. And in every single official communication from that club, every single mention, whether it's St. Louis City SC or if they're just saying city in the press release, it's always capitalized. I'm like, what? Stop screaming at me, first of all. And second of all, why? Like, I don't know. I guess I'm talking about St. Louis for no reason at all. So maybe that's why. All publicity is good publicity. It's so dumb. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
I have a feeling we're going to be talking a lot about St. Louis City on this podcast in future years. That's all I'm going to say.
Will you say it correctly? St. Louis City.
St. Louis City SC.
SC. Maybe we should just whisper the other part and just like say city really loud moving forward. St. Louis City SC. I wonder if that's...
We're totally sidetracked now. We were supposed to be talking about the villains, Sam.
The villains, yes. So Vegas is obviously a candidate for the, 30th expansion slot that was sort of semi-vacated by Sacramento, who are maybe interested in getting back into that spot, but they don't have an ownership group yet. It's been reported that it's likely to be Vegas. That's everything that we've heard, is that it's likely to be Vegas. I think the league wants to be there for a lot of reasons, right? It's a global city in many ways. It brings people together from all over the world. Everyone knows Vegas. It's a really growing population. It's a growing population that likes soccer. They've sold out many games there for Mexican teams, for Mexico national team. The Gold Cup final was just there. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Certainly my expectation is that Team 30 will be there. And it's just kind of a question of which ownership group is going to get it, right? So I don't know. What do you think about, you told me you like Villains, but do you disagree with anything I just said?
No, I mean, I think our reporting, as we were still reporting, was that, you know, Vegas looked likely to be the 30th team. And I think you and I have both heard, you know, I don't know if we can say it out loud yet, but like what the timeline likely looks like on that happening. Certainly we've seen the support of Major League Soccer for that market. They've stuck the League's Cup final in that market for,
of course, how could I forget?
Years, a marquee event for Major League Soccer, a big push that they're making. Gold Cup final was there. So there's a lot of energy around Las Vegas as a market. They have the political support. You know, I've received multiple quotes on the record from the mayor's office stating unequivocally that they want Major League Soccer in the city. Mm-hmm. They have a stadium. You know, it's not a, you know, regulation width field, but...
is this field regulation size or what?
You know, it's close, but it's not quite there. It's not the narrowest field in Major League Soccer.
I mean, if you can play at Yankee Stadium, you can play at the Raiders Stadium.
And they're going to need an arena that's indoors if you're playing in Las Vegas, obviously. So they've got the stadium. They've got the political support. And according to this report, they have a billionaire ownership group, which is a prereq, almost. I guess I shouldn't quite say that. I don't know for sure what Houston's ownership group valuation is. But, you know, typically MLS is looking for whales. They're looking for billionaires to compete in this league.
Whales.
So they have all three of those. I mean, that's how it's described to me. You know, does this market have a whale or not? And Sacramento doesn't. They don't have a whale, and Vegas does. And that, that's all that matters. As you know, when I first started reporting this story, Sam, both of us did, about what was going to happen with Sacramento. Early on, we started to call expansion markets that had been involved in the process before and started talking to different sources. And, you know, I was hearing from one source, I think you were hearing from a source, that, okay, this might be a drawn out process. MLS is not really in a rush. You know, they're going to take their time to find the right ownership group to make sure they can put it in the right market. And I had one person say very bluntly to me, don't overthink this. You know, the first billionaire that puts his hand up and says, I want to take a team to this market, it's going to happen. And Charlotte's a good example of that. You know, when there is a billionaire willing to put the money down on the table and say, I want to go in right now.
You have to have a path to a stadium too.
That's sure. But if you have that billionaire, that matters, that outweighs anything else. And looks like, according to this trademark filing, Vegas has a couple billionaires.
Yeah. And I don't know, they've obviously done good things with the Milwaukee Bucks, Wes Edens. Aston Villa has done pretty well here in recent years. And, you know, they can take all that money they just got for Jack Grealish and, you know, put it towards an MLS expansion fee so they can then pick, I don't know, your favorite UCF senior in a future expansion draft. It's the world of football is interconnected, Paul, in a beautiful way. So,
Sam, we left the state of Florida. Okay, don't bring UCF into this.
Why are you throwing shade on UCF? Your alma mater.
You just said we left the state of Florida.
Well, I went back. Okay, sue me. What are you gonna do about it? Go Golden Knights.
They're not the Golden Knights anymore, Sam. They're just the Knights.
They switched.
They switched a long time ago.
Well, I'm a UCF original. Okay. Speaking of the world of football being interconnected, and just to put a bow on this Vegas thing, actually, before I do that. I don't think Sacramento has much hope at this point, which is sad for a number of reasons, because they were already in and they've really supported in USL. And from every single, like, if you want to say, does this city deserve it? Sacramento deserves it. Those fans deserve it more than anyone, really. They've done so much. But you know, the league, for better or worse, I don't think really wants to be there. It's not the sexiest market in the world. And there's no owner right now, which is the most important thing.
I think there are some owners that wanted to be there that really felt that market could be successful. But yeah, if you don't have that whale, if you don't have that big owner, it's not going to happen. But Sam, let's be honest with our listeners. Why are you truly disappointed that Sacramento is not going to happen? There are three people in the world. Well, I should say four, but I'll leave the fourth one out for now, that Sam really wants and cares about in Major League Soccer. You all know very well that Nuhu Tolo is one of them.
Yeah.
The second one I'm about to reveal, and the third one I'll reveal later in the show. But the second one is Guy Fieri, who wanted to be a minority owner of Sacramento. And Sam,
I was like, I have no idea where you're going with this.
Sam is a huge Guy Fieri fan. I mean, I cannot emphasize.
You're pronouncing it. First of all, you're pronouncing it incorrectly. Okay, put some respect on Guy Fieri. Put the flair on his name, Paul. Like he puts the flames on his cars and the bleach in his hair and the donkey sauce on every food that he eats. Okay, so just wanted to clear that up.
But that's you're personally disappointed by not being able to do, like, everyone's trying to do sit down stories with Matthew McConaughey and Austin. Sam was already putting calls in for a sit down with Guy Fieri on his ownership of Sacramento.
I mean, that's not true, but I should have been. And you know what?
Still time. There's still
Guy
time.
Guy went to UNLV. He's got roots in Vegas too.
Oh, it's not over. Look at Sam with the biographical information.
I have a friend who wrote a play about Guy Fieri. I don't know.
He went to my bar in DC and people weren't happy about it. That's all I got. My sister loves
Why?
Triple D. It brings a different clientele into a dive bar.
Oh, okay. So you guys are just snobs. Guy's just the man of the people. He's just trying to shine some light on diners, drive-ins, and dives. And Paul is apparently too good for that.
I didn't say I had a problem with it. I said some people had a problem with it.
Some people at your favorite bar in the world. So it's what does that say about you?
My, it says about me that my bar will not change despite whoever goes in it, whether it's Guy Fieri or people who don't like Guy Fieri. I still love that bar.
I mean, your bar is not in Flavortown. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, don't eat anything at that bar except for tater tots. It's called the Tin in DC. Just don't eat anything but the tater tots.
All right, you go.
We're moving on from Guy Fieri.
I wonder if Guy had the tots.
He definitely had the tots.
Moving on from Guy Fieri to news from Chicago and from Switzerland. The Fire announced on Wednesday that club owner and chairman Joe Mansueto has bought Swiss first division team FC Lugano, which, for those curious, is a beautiful city in the Italian part of Switzerland, which is a small slice of that small mountainous country. There you go. I don't know why I'm going into this, but here we are.
I mean, there's a pretty important detail. It's like, it's basically like on Lake Como, right? They play like right by Lake Como. I mean, it's a pretty good place.
It's
to
on
a team.
I think it's on Lake Lugano, actually. But yes, it is close to Como geographically. Yeah. Not far away from Milan either. Why do I know all these things? It doesn't make any sense. Imagine if I had space in my brain for something that could make me money instead of stuff like that. Like, can you think about
it? I mean, you're saying that on this podcast. I mean, we talk about it all the time. I mean,
my head is in my
so
hands.
So much of our time learning about Major League Soccer rules.
I just gave biographical details on Guy Fieri. What the hell's wrong with me,
followed by the geographic, you know, value of Lugano in the Swiss League. I'm going to pick up while Sam looks up at the sky and pulls his hair out of his head and Tam pops into his head for no reason and he gets even angrier of the things.
Don't say Tam. Don't say Tam to me right now.
in his brain. Look, I think, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I think that we are, because of the results on the field, we don't talk about this enough. I'm working on a story, I guess you could say. It's been kind of shelved and then going to come back out about Joe Mansueto.
It's been a process.
I believe that Joe Mansueto is going to rank, or does currently rank, maybe in the top five, maybe even higher than that, of ambitious owners in Major League Soccer.
Well, he's not afraid to spend money.
With the willingness to spend. He's going to build a new training facility in the city of Chicago. He spent to get out of Bridgeview. He spent to buy the team. He has now spent to buy a team in Switzerland that can be a, quote, partner club of the Chicago Fire, to definitely not pay guys to play there first, to then come to MLS on, you know, slightly friendlier deals that fit within salary cap. That doesn't happen in the league.
No.
There's a very strong and getting stronger compliance department. I don't mean to say that Chicago's doing that. I don't know what Chicago's going to do. But he spent millions of dollars to buy another team, and I think that shows the level of ambition that he has. One thing I'll say, somebody tweeted, Jordan Gardner tweeted, and I responded, you know, what has George Heitz done to, you know, indicate Heitz and Sebastian Pelzer that they should run a team in Switzerland, considering their lack of MLS success? Well George Heitz
successfully
won,
they did successfully run a team in Switzerland.
George Heitz did. He won eight consecutive domestic titles in his 8 years at FC Basel. So he does have I guess you could call it some experience in the Swiss market. But I do think there is one thing that I have a problem with here, which is that he has struggled in MLS. That is a valid point. And now he will be the sporting director of two clubs at the same time. So they're going to have to rebuild the fire, and he struggled to build the first roster. So there's probably a little bit of valid concern here about, is he going to be able to apply the attention necessary to both clubs to be ideal? But I believe the organizational structure is such that there is going to be a director at Lugano. And Pelzer obviously is focused on the fire as well. And so, you know, I don't think he needs to be involved in the day-to-day of both clubs. I do think that he's going to be able to leverage a market he knows very, 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 very well to both field a successful team in Switzerland and also, you know, leverage every inch of it that he can into helping the Chicago Fire. So I actually am very intrigued to see how this works, because when we see owners in MLS owning other teams, the MLS team is the small fish. You know, Bologna, a bigger fish. Man City,
Arsenal.
Obviously. Arsenal, you know.
The Red Bull European clubs.
The Red Bull European clubs. In this case, the Fire are the bigger fish. And that is incredibly unique and incredibly interesting to me. And I'm very excited to see what Heitz does with it, what Mansueto does with it, how they use it, what kind of maybe innovative things happen, because this is new. And I like new things in MLS. I don't know. Sam, am I crazy here?
No, I think it's cool. I think it's definitely different. It's a different, I mean, this isn't something that we would have seen even 5 years ago, right? In terms of the MLS club being the big fish, right? It's Switzerland. I don't know a ton about the league. I do know that guys who have come from Switzerland to MLS historically have not done great. I think of Schelzengashi off the top of my head, Innocent Emegara, blast from the past there, San Jose Earthquakes, former DP.
I think in general, Scandinavia has been pretty hit or miss. Switzerland's not been among the lower rankings.
Switzerland's not in Scandinavia.
Well, I think like the Scandinavian leagues and the Swiss league are kind of in a similar bucket, I should say.
It's not even close to Scandinavia.
Yeah, well,
what are you talking about?
You know what I'm saying. Those leagues are very similar.
This has turned into a geography podcast, and let's just say I am carrying and playing the piano for that geography podcast. I'm not speaking that great, though.
You're not talking good.
No,
but
I'm not.
You're right. Switzerland's not in Scandinavia. However, I think that those leagues are put into the same bucket in Europe. They're the same level. And I think in general, that level struggles. They struggle in MLS. There's a few exceptions. Robin Lode right now has come around a bit from Finland.
Anton Tinnerholm. Scandinavia has been okay. The Swedish league's been okay for MLS, in my opinion. Anyway, we're way off topic again. We're all over the place on this show. I want to go back to something you said in Heitz spreading himself thin, right? And the Fire have some experience with this. Nelson Rodriguez, right? He was hired as GM, and then he was promoted to GM and chief business officer, president of the club. And he had to run both sides, business and sporting. And he was pretty open about the fact that, hey, this can't be a permanent thing. Like, I can't do this all by myself. And he can't. No one really can. It's two full-time jobs.
I mean,
there aren't enough hours
in
the day.
My story about Miami was Paul McDonough was spread too thin. You know, that people felt like he could have done a better job as a sporting director if he wasn't trying to build a stadium and training facility at the same time.
And you know, how does that not apply here? Right? Like, I understand that they have other people on staff, and Heitz can maybe be kind of the governor of both and oversee both, and you can have people running the day-to-day of both. But he was hired to run the Chicago Fire sporting department initially, and he did a bad job off the bat. Right? Look at what the Fire have been since the start of the 2020 season. They've been a bad team. And now you're going to say, hey, here's a promotion. And, you know, like this team, this roster that needs serious, serious work. Serious work this offseason. They have a ton of guys out of contract. They're going to have to rebuild big time. Now you're going to have your focus in two places. And I'm not saying he's not going to give the proper amount of attention to Chicago. And I'm not saying that he's not going to work as hard as he humanly can. Right? Because I'm sure he will. I'm sure he's committed. Right? And all of that stuff. But it's just like, all right, you're throwing more on his plate when you haven't at all figured out what's going on in MLS. And that's a little bit worrying to me. From a long-term perspective, I think this is really cool, right? Because I do think that the potential for it is really interesting, and I think they can do a lot of good things, and the fact that the Fire will be the big fish in this relationship, I think is fantastic. But from a short-term perspective, I'm like, really? Like, this is how you're acting after the last two seasons with this organization and with this guy running the show? I don't know. It's surprising to me from that front.
I think there's a level of confidence in George Heights. And we talk about this all the time. I think the way I've put it before is when you hire a sporting director from abroad without MLS experience and somebody who kind of is going to go on their own with it, you're hiring a buffer period. You're hiring a learning period. You're hiring...
You're saying we're not going to get it for 2 years.
Right. We're going to need 2 years to learn what not to do and then hopefully learn what not to do. And some people learn and some people don't. I think there's a level of confidence, clearly, that George Heights has learned quickly what works in MLS and what doesn't. And I think you can look at some of his signings in the second go-round.
I think that's fair. I'm
Luca
not saying he hasn't learned. I think he probably... I'm sure he probably has.
Sure.
But that... like. Turning this team around and rebuilding that roster is going to be a serious lift.
But you can say that, and we don't really know what kind of lift exists in Lugano's roster. Maybe very little to nothing, right? And maybe the sporting director there has things covered for now, and he can focus this January on just the Fire and then kind of pivot and say, okay. And in that focus on the Fire, maybe say, okay, I found and I've identified these five players who we won't have room for at the Fire, who are younger, who I think have potential. And I'm going to sign those five players to Lugano. And I'm going to sign these other 10 players to Chicago. You can work that in concert. I do agree it is going to be difficult. But I think what's important here is the idea clearly that they think of these two teams as one roster. If that's the case, it simplifies the job and the task. You know, obviously, I think I or you, one of us, has to go dive into this, probably me because of the story, aforementioned story that I'm quote-unquote working on.
quote-unquote.
That's been happening for a long time and also not happening for a long time. But
I think it's been not happening for longer than it's been happening.
It's definitely been not happening for longer than it's been happening. But, you know, it's not like I have anything coming up this fall. There's not like a World Cup qualifiers or anything else happening that I need to focus on. But the point being that if you're structuring this, and again, we haven't seen this before in MLS. My guess is if you're structuring this, is we're going to kind of think about this as one big roster. You know, instead of having an MLS Ligue 2 team, we're going to think of it as, you know, Chicago Fire and then Lugano, and we're going to use all of those resources together to create one pool of players.
Yeah.
Then I think it could work. And I would guess that's the strategy. My other guess would be that it's going to be a little bit of time before you get that working as one. And my
symbiotic
guess is you prioritize Chicago Fire in January, and then you kind of start to build out Chicago Fire player potential in Lugano's roster over the next windows after that.
Well, two great cities by two different lakes. So they have
not in Scandinavia, Switzerland.
About
1,200 miles or so away.
Whoa, 1,200. Did you look that up?
No, I just pulled it out of this section of my brain that, just like you, I have random facts about Swiss geography.
I don't think you're right. I'm going to look it up during the commercial break. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
And we are back, third and final segment of Allocation Disorder for this week. We're going to just talk, we're just going to take a little spin around the globe, you know, continue our geography theme. Paul, by the way, I looked it up. From the middle of Switzerland to the middle of Denmark, which is in Scandinavia, 746 miles, sorry. So you weren't really that close.
Well, it depends on the route you take, you know. Is it as the crow flies? Is it, you know, a drive?
That was actually walking. I don't know why I looked it up walking. It would take 249 hours, in case you're curious. All right. Well, let's, you know, we're not going to be walking from Switzerland to Denmark, as fun as that sounds. We are going to be watching MLS. We have been watching MLS. We have been watching some games in Europe. There's a lot going on right now, man. There was a full slate of midweek games this week in MLS, I think 9 on Wednesday, 2 on Tuesday. The Rapids, who I just finished an article about, who I've been talking about for a while. They can't stop winning. They're fourth in the league in points per game right now, which is pretty remarkable and I think worth mentioning. I watched Nashville-Orlando on Wednesday night. Pretty fun, entertaining match. Two teams that I think are going to have something to say in the Eastern Conference come playoff time. So that's going to be interesting. But I know you wanted to talk about some national team-related items. So what you got for me?
Well, I just think there are some interesting decisions that Greg Berhalter is going to have to make ahead of qualification. And like you said, we're not that far away from that call-up happening. I mean, you and I are flying in a little bit more than a week to Nashville for the start of camp. So there's really two games left for players to make their impression in Europe, maybe a few more than that if you're in MLS, though with the All-Star break, probably not. Probably one game left. Mm-hmm. Maybe two, I guess, on the weekend after the All-Star game. And you know, I think there are two positions that are really, really interesting to me, center back and forward. Forward, Jossy Zardes seems to have picked up an injury, a hamstring injury. That's a huge blow for this U.S.
Yeah,
national team.
Huge.
Josh Sargent, meanwhile, moves to the Premier League.
To Norwich.
And he is not starting. He's not playing as a number 9 yet, or at least he didn't in the first game. Came off the bench.
Yeah. Still, you know, pretty early.
He's playing for a team that's not very good, not expected to be very good, not expected to get a ton of
opportunities. But they do play some decent attacking soccer there.
Yeah, we'll see what kind of chances he gets. They've certainly, the discussion from our colleagues about Sargent's role is interesting, that they're talking about running a different formation than they used all of last year, and that formation would probably have Sargent playing underneath Pukki as an attacking player, not an out-and-out striker, but
secondary striker,
kind of
underneath
sitting
forward
in that secondary role, maybe with another secondary striker next to him.
Sure.
So, you know, I think there are some big questions. I also wanted to use this discussion about the number 9 to bring up that person I promised I would bring up earlier, who is another person who's quickly risen up the ranks of Sam's favorite people, who I don't think actually has a shot to be considered for this job, but I'm using it as an excuse to bring him up. Cade Cowell, who loves to lift. You know, had just so many great, colorful moments that Sam enjoyed in Felipe's piece about him. But I just feel like you connect to his broness. And I just want to bring that up.
I mean, like, anyone that knows me knows I'm not, you know, hitting the weights super hard. but Cade Cowell is. He's doing it for both of us. You know, it was so funny. I was cracking up reading this article. I actually told Felipe, who wrote a piece about Cade Cowell that dropped this week, to ask him how much he benches. And he did, and Cade was like, oh, 245, easy, but I could bench more if the team actually let me lift. he grew up when he was 13 or something. His dad put a gym, basically. They built a gym in the backyard, and they called it the prison yard. He played for a youth team called Ballistic United. Like, he's just an extreme kind of guy, Cade Cowell, you know? And Yeah, I think he could be one for the future. I don't think he's getting called up this window.
But he definitely is getting called up in Sam's favorite MLS player ranking. So anyway.
I mean, one last thing.
Yeah.
He's somehow like got kind of Wando weird Johnny Appleseed status while being the complete physical opposite of Chris Wondolowski.
For sure. But look at the striker situation, Sam. If Jossie's hurt, DK hasn't been playing in Orlando because of his injuries that he picked mm-hmm. up with the national team. Sargent's in this kind of weird hybrid spot right now. He's going to get called up for sure. But, you know, he's in this new change in this new role. You know, where do you go? Do you go to PFOC? Do you go to Sabachu, whatever we're going to call him? I think
PFOC, you know, PFOC is what he prefers
according to his Twitter profile. Where are we turning here? Do you call Pepe? There are reports out of Mexico that Pepe is going to choose Mexico. You know, do you call him? He's not based on locking him in as a dual national, based on his form as a number nine.
Yeah. Yes, I do, to answer that question. He's been scoring a ton of goals with Dallas. He's doing some good things. There's also the thing where you want to lock him in if he's interested. So yeah, I make a push for him for sure. Maybe we see Matthew Hoppe get a shot at striker.
Yeah,
it's not a bad shot. Like, we saw him on the wing in the Gold Cup. That's not really where he plays, naturally, right? His natural position is as a number nine. So maybe we see that. I would be curious to see that. I'd be interested in that. But I think it's pretty much, you know, I guess we'll see the extent of Zardes' injury. But it seems like Sargent's going to be the first choice for those three games, even despite all those things that you mentioned with the club situation. So, yeah, I don't know. I think we'll both dive into that and maybe write a piece just kind of on a roster prediction, that sort of thing, here in the next few days. But, yeah, it feels like Sargent and PFOC and maybe Hoppe. Who knows? Maybe Gio Reyna. Maybe if you want to play him in kind of a number nine role. I don't know. I don't think I would do that, but maybe it's a possibility. So, yeah, it's not great. Obviously less than ideal, but it is what it is. It's kind of the biggest question mark in terms of a position group, I think, that I have. But you wanted to talk about center backs.
Yeah, too. I just think that there, again, is an interesting decision to be made of which center backs to bring. I think there are two who 100% are getting called, John Brooks and Miles Robinson. And I think those two start the game for the U.S.
Zimmerman's back playing again.
He's that's the other again. One. So when you look beyond those two, you have Walker Zimmerman. You know, Miazga looks like he's moving to Alaves, but he hasn't been playing. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm guessing he's out. Eric Palmer Brown looking for a move, hasn't been playing. I'm guessing he's out.
He might end up at Venezia. Their owner told me just yesterday that they're still trying to get that done.
Tim Ream is playing again in the championship. Greg Berhalter looks at him as a favorite. Maybe he brings him. He has experience in World Cup qualifiers. I could see him coming.
Expanded squad feels like Ream's getting a call.
Yeah, McKenzie hasn't really been. I don't know. Does McKenzie get a call? I just think that Richards has remained with Bayern for now, but mm-hmm. hasn't been playing. Does he get a call? Does Greg Berhalter just want to take a look at him? You know, can you afford to do that if you're bringing Ream? I just think there are some question marks about what happens beyond those first two. And I also think, Sam, and this is just something I'm thinking about for when we actually see the team on the field. I think Miles Robinson's ability to defend in space is going to end up impacting who gets called at fullback. Because I think ideally you put Miles Robinson next to Sergiño Dest. Because Sergiño Dest likes to go forward and stay forward. His defending with the national team has been shaky. And Miles mm-hmm. Robinson is your best center back by far, isolated in space. And so I think you play Sergiño Dest as a right back so that he can play next to Miles Robinson. Which means Anthony Robinson, Sam Vines are suddenly going to be more important to this team. And, you know, Joe Scally started at left back for Gladbach. He's a right-footed player.
Against Bayern. And he did great.
And he did well. You know, he's not going to be playing often. You know, they have a starter at left back there who's, you know, one of the star players of the team. But maybe he gets called in. You know, maybe he gets called in to have a shot and to be seen up close. It's a totally new beast because it's World Cup qualifiers. There's not really room to get a first look at guys. But... you know, I don't know. I just think Miles Robinson kind of changes the dynamics on the back line in that way. So interesting choices for Berhalter to make.
Who starts in that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be Brooks and Miles Robinson.
No, in goal. In goal.
I think Zach Steffen starts in goal. You know, he had a good performance for City.
In the Community Shield.
Turns out he can also make saves, so, you know, surprisingly.
It is surprising. It's shock.
I mean,
who would have thought?
Who would have thought? I think Matt Turner will be there, but I think Zach Steffen will be playing in the first round of games.
Sounds reasonable enough to me. One last thing here before we go. I just wanted to note Jesse Marsch, he lost his first game in charge of RB Leipzig. It's an All-American Bundesliga coaching matchup on Friday between Jesse Marsch and Pellegrino Matarazzo, who many of you are probably hearing about for the first time. He is from New Jersey. These guys actually, I think Jesse remembered playing against him in college in the Ivy League. Jesse went to Princeton and Matarazzo went to Columbia. I don't actually know that they overlapped, but just kind of an interesting footnote. They're playing RB Leipzig in Stuttgart on Friday. So for those of you with ESPN Plus, you can check that one out. Anyway, that is time. That is our time for this week, Paul. It's been fun. You know, we had to record like two or three times or something. I can't even really remember. We talked about Guy Fieri. And yeah, thanks for listening to Allocation Disorder, brought to you by Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Well, Sam, I know you just tried to end it there, but I just want to say
I did end it there. How dare you? I'm excited
for an end of year at some point, you know, mix of all the things I've messed up on this show, the words I've mispronounced.
Yeah, like trying to extend the show right now.
Trying
for instance,
to put
might be the number
Scandinavia.
One. What are you doing right now?
I just want to make sure I note that that's something I'd like to do.
Okay. Thanks.